Hello, heroes, and welcome to Backstory. I'm your host, Alex Roberts. My guest today is Jackson Tegu, a designer I've admired for a long time, whose games tend to sort of straddle the line, and by that I mean gently and politely ignore the line between live action and tabletop play. They're often small, focused experiences about getting to know someone better, whether that's dear friends or your whole neighborhood or very often yourself. Jackson makes really cozy games, and I think we had a really cozy chat.
Just remove a couple of things from my desktop so I don't mess around with them.
And
make a lot of noise.
Okay,
that's
good.
That's my next thing. What am I taking off? Yes, a DVD copy of Star Wars The Force Awakens, my keys, and a guitar pick. Off they go.
Those are all potentially loud items.
They can be so loud. I should also take this hairpin, this bell, and this small stone that my niece has colored on with markers.
Oh, those sound like magic items.
And this book of matches, this tiny book of blank poetry, a 50-cent coin, a pocket knife, and then a violet pen and a blue pen, all going.
Wow. What a purge.
Yeah, just get these small objects off of there.
I'm just in a closet. I have nothing to move or remove.
Am I correct in assuming you can't actually see anything?
Well, my computer is open, so there's like a computer screen glow, and I sort of feel like a hacker, but one who's in a closet for some reason. And has like some scarves hung up for like sound baffling. So I don't know, kind of an odd hacker, I guess, but.
Well, it feels very like, you know, like you're going to be making, you just like, no one can know your identity. And maybe they'd use like drones to try and like see your like signature laptop through the window or something.
Drones have no better way of like seeing things than just like optical. Yeah. You mentioned poetry. Do you write poetry, Jackson?
Oh, I do. I do write poetry. Seldom, but I do write poetry.
Okay, this is a question, a request. Can you send me some of your poems? Because, first of all, I mean, I would love to read them. I'm sure they're very nice and I'd like them. But also, something that I do sometimes is record myself reading very short poems and uploading them to the One Shot Network secret archive. So like people who support the network on Patreon, they get like a little archive of things. And yeah, I have to like periodically add stuff to that. So that's what I do.
Cool. Yeah, sure. How short are we talking?
I don't think I've submitted anything that was longer than like a minute and a bit long. Yeah. We're talking like one pagers.
Yeah. I'm mostly in the one or two pagers. I write on small pages also, so.
Yeah, you're like a real pencil and paper kind of guy.
I am, yeah.
What is that? What's behind that?
I think that I feel like it's easier to move ideas out of my head when I'm using real paper. Maybe that's partially because I can make little side notes. Like the thoughts don't have to be linear in any way. It's very, very quick to, you know, jump down the page or have little side things. Little notations on the side.
Right. And to just like write things in circles and like write things over here or like put things in really big letters and
absolutely, yeah,
or small letters.
Yeah. And I sort of, you know, I usually work with a title. Like a title usually comes first for me. And then when it doesn't, or on one of these projects I'm working on right now, I change the title and it is sort of like thrown me off a little bit, but that's also fun.
Can I ask what that project is? Can you talk about it?
I can. It's an upcoming Patreon project, which I'm not sure what the turnaround on, I think you may have mentioned it, but I forget now, approximately how long it takes from interview to...
Oh, this one will be up in like a week or two.
Yeah. Okay. So the game will also be out in about a week or two. So.
Oh, cool. Exciting.
Yeah, yeah. The players portray the classic fates, the three... women who are gods or more than gods or what have you, who at first spin and then measure out and then cut off the lives, or in this case, many different things. These fates originally came from Greek mythology, or maybe something before that. I don't really know. But the translation of their group name is Apportioners. And I really liked that name. But I found it very easy to misunderstand. And I think the term Abortioners is really not what I'm going for with the game. So I shifted to Allotters. So it's not a huge shift, but it's still been like enough of a sort of surprise for myself. I don't know. I don't know if that thought was going anywhere.
No, I like it. And I like the idea of the way that things can kind of take on a life of their own. And you're like, oh, okay, well, I still want to make this other game. But if you're not that game, that's fine. I can still spend time with you. We'll see.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting that you start or sometimes start from a title, because it's just kind of like reading and rereading a lot of your games over the past week or so. All of them, or almost all of them, seem to me to be about like a particular feeling or a really, really specific kind of situation. So like, you know, when this happens and that happens and you kind of feel like this, okay, I'll make a game around that. So like, you know, when you're just like at a cottage with your friends and you really just want to like connect with them, or like, you know, when you're like 17-ish and you're just like wandering around the neighborhood, like kind of high on like whatever. So I wonder, have you ever thought about that consciously, like starting from a feeling?
I think that, yes. And I think that part of that is that the title or like a particular turn of phrase will just like, will take me to that feeling, will like, you know, grab me and I'll be like, oh yes. For example, you know, you referenced this recent game of mine, The Lesser Well of Dreams. That phrase to me, thinking about how just sort of like what, like I sort of nestle into that phrase. And it just like, I, you know, can like feel it sort of around me. And like, it's this very calm, but also, I was going to say potentially upsetting. And that does not feel like a small group gathering to me, though I suppose they can be. No, but yeah. Taking a phrase, it's like inhaling it and feeling its feelings, smelling its smells. That was the end of that line.
Cool, good. You know, that's the one disadvantage of not doing, there are so many advantages, but that's one of the disadvantages of not doing like video when I do these recordings, is that like in that moment when you were describing that, I was just like staring off into space and like smiling and being like, yeah. But I realized I hadn't communicated that at all. And so I could just as likely have been like staring at my screen being like, Tegu, what are you talking about? give my listeners something to chew on. Damn it.
Right. Yeah. No, I feel... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go. I'm the interviewer, so you always get to go.
Oh, sweet. Wow, this is like when you're like the youngest at a board game meetup.
What? What kind of board game meetings are you going to?
Oh, imaginary ones.
This is just like that dream I had. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, no. Well, I don't know what I was going to say.
Now you couldn't even remember. That's great. So I was going to say, speaking of feedback, how often do you get to hear about people playing your game?
Oh, not often enough. Yeah. I feel like that's, I mean, there's a lot of games out there also that people have a lot of games to choose from, and they don't have as much available time, I'm sure, as most of them would like to have. But yeah, oof. Do I love hearing about games? Absolutely. I love it when people are able to dip into one of the worlds I've made and then relay some of those tales to me.
I know. I think people like underestimate how like meaningful that is and how like nice that is to people who make games, because it does feel super weird to make something exclusively for the purpose of like other people engaging with it. Like that has to be engaged with in order to like even like exist, arguably, and then just kind of like send it off like a little like message in a bottle thing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's true of a lot of different types of art, because I mean, of course, like a novel, you know, it could be argued only exists while someone's reading it. And actually last night I was going through some of my old compact discs, which is a, you know, a file format that's actually encoded onto like a plastic, well, a disc. And yeah, it's like interesting, like listening to these like old CDs that I got on tour or something, listening to this band Great Job out of Tucson. And like, I don't know if they're, if any of them still live in Tucson. Like, I don't know, you know, anything about these people beyond like this, like totally exciting time that we shared there and these CDs that I got. And I did have that, like, I should like email them and be like, hey, it's been absolutely years, but I still listen to your stuff. This thing that like maybe you've moved on from is still impacting me. I'm still like catching waves of like these like ridiculous, goofy, and like extremely high energy songs that you made, that you recorded.
I bet they would love that. You know, that could really make somebody's day.
Yeah, 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 totally. Yeah. And it's also like it comes into this other like interesting thing about like how we make art and maybe in the making of it outgrow it or soon after, you know, and then other people take that as a point on their journey, but like maybe long after one is finished with it. Of course, we can return to the things that we've made. Yeah, it's like interesting to think like maybe these people don't make music anymore. Maybe they just make music in a very different way. Maybe they have different, you know, maybe they don't like that old project. Maybe they're like, oh, I had a falling out with that friend. Or, you know, maybe they're just like, oh, it's just so raw and scratchy and like not really cohesive. And I'm like, right, right. Those are the things that are good about it.
Yeah. Do you have games that you feel that way about? Things that you're just like done with?
I mean, not consciously. No, I mean, the more I look back at one, I mean, it's funny that I've just said that now, but like, as I think about it, I've got a lot of projects shelved, like dozens and dozens. And, you know, I'll like sort of like follow that line as long as it'll go. And then I'll probably get interrupted by some like real life thing, put that down for a little while. And what a little while means is 2 days, 5 years, whatever. And then I'll like have something that I'll like, yeah, come back to it. So yeah, I guess, though there are projects, yeah, I guess there are maybe a couple of Patreon games that I've thought of as sketches, and like maybe those mechanics have a life beyond that small game. It's also really nice to think about like revisiting one's old art and then having it surprise oneself.
Oh, has that happened to you?
Oh, many, many times, many times.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have a bunch of unreleased albums also, same sort of perfectionism problems. But I found on one of my older computers, I found like a mock-up of the layout of what the cover would look like. And I was just like, this is great. Oh, this is so good. So there's that. And then also like, yeah, with a lot of my older songs and stuff, having it's just like a really easy path to go back to that moment. And be like, oh, these feelings, I still have these feelings sometimes. Yeah, and I mean, let's sort of like flip back through my game catalog and pick this game here. It is Good Journey, My Friend. And this particular game has some interesting things.
And that's a game about like saying goodbye, basically.
It is, yeah. And so it's a 3-player game. One of the players plays time, and they move time along by leading sort of rounds of humming with the other people. And so then like time leaps forward. And I feel like that's something that's interesting that more could be done with. And maybe I'll be the person to do more with that. Maybe someone else will do more with that. But I feel like that's like a piece that like when I've gone back to it and played it again, been like, hey, this is actually really cool. This has some life beyond this little, I'm trying to use a metaphor here, but this little game.
Do you think maybe, because I know that what stops a lot of people from finishing any kind of art and putting it out there is that, you know, self-judgment and like self-consciousness, that they judge their own stuff more harshly than they would other people's stuff. And is there some kind of like softening with time too, where it's just like, oh, this is past me's thing and I can love that because it belongs to like a very long ago me that I like don't judge as much.
Oh yeah, totally. Totally, totally, totally. Yeah. Like this, yeah, it's like the past me that I'm like protecting.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, oh, I would never want anyone to say anything bad about this. Like this is, though there's that like one song, say on that album, you're like, yeah, you were messing around with a drum machine for 4 minutes. That could have been a minute.
That's a whole path not taken there, young self. Yeah,
totally.
My friend and I were talking, though, about the timeline of, we were talking about writing specifically, where, if something is a certain percentage of your life old, you just, hate it. But then if it's any older than that, you're like, nah, this is actually great. And obviously, if it's something that you really, you finish right now, you're like, oh, yeah, it's awesome. And I don't know, does that happen for games, too, where they just have to pass through the gauntlet of, ooh?
Yeah. I think that, in the big picture, yes. And in a more specific picture, there are things that I'm trying to get better at this at working with my exhaustion levels of taking on projects that are right now I'm trying to write my Fastival game. And I just keep doing things that are far larger than I realize they are. And when I do this with a Patreon or a game destined for Patreon, if the game gets too big or too grandiose, I'll often pivot and be like, okay, this game is now way huge, which is sort of funny because then I have a bunch of these mid-sized games, the games that are too big for a short story, but not maybe as big enough for a novel or could be built out to be a novel in time. But I can't make them right now because I'm in this Patreon loop.
And that's both sustaining, but also kind of limiting.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's just with anything, you make choices and then you do those choices. Yeah, totally. So it'll be interesting at some point when I shift things around and get some of these larger games out there.
It's funny because I've mostly been reading the games that are coming out of your Patreon recently. And so that got me thinking Jackson really works a lot with one player games or maybe two or three player games, and they're all very short. And I wanted to ask you about that. But are you actually really super drawn to that? And if so, why? But or is that just a consequence of requirements right now?
Right. I think that I am drawn to it. I mean, I'm also drawn to, I guess it's the experience of being alone is very interesting creativity-wise, personhood-wise, that, I don't know if other people for example, experience their gender when they're alone, or if that's a thing that is more a social thing. I don't experience my gender when I'm alone. And coming out of ideas like that, it feels being alone is maybe a really fruitful place to be, a fruitful state to be in. That's solo games, that I am drawn to making them, partially because it is, just a space that I exist in a lot of the time. I'm sure a lot of other people exist in a lot of the time of just being alone with their thoughts. And maybe I said earlier that my ideas come from titles, but maybe that's just sort of how they coalesce. That's how I'm able to put a word to that feeling. I'll be sitting there by myself. There's this game I haven't finished called, now I can't remember the name of it. This is classic Jackson, FYI.
It's all driven by the title, which I can't remember.
Really important thing. Yeah. Totally, yeah. Very serious about all this. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to see if I can find it. Hold
on. That's great. Right.
Yeah. It's a really good title. I'm back. I feel silly for saying this out loud, partially because I also, this is an aside, right? But I feel silly revealing things about my games that are unpublished because I feel like that takes energy away from completing them.
I've heard that from other designers too, that they're like, if I just talk about it, then I'll never actually do it. What does that mean?
It means that it's exciting to reveal something, and I can reveal it for a lot less energy expenditure by just talking about it. And then I get some percentage of the reaction. Maybe the reaction is a laugh, or someone just giving way and they sit back on the chair behind them and their eyes are wide and they're oh my God, this happens very frequently to me when I tell people about my ideas.
This is funny, though, because it goes back to what we were talking about at the top, like about people telling you that they've played their game and talking about that experience and having some kind of reaction and how, like, how energizing and motivating and like validating that is. It's really tempting to just like get a piece of that, you know?
Yes, 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 it is. No, it totally is. And yet, I think it's so much more valuable to actually have the thing, because once it's a document, it like goes outside of that little conversation.
Okay, well, do you want to?
But I want to tell you about this game.
You're still going to do it? Okay, cool, good.
I do. Yeah, I am. Yeah. So this is one of those games where I'm alone and doing something. And then I start thinking about like, what would be interesting? How would this be like interesting? Or I'll start like daydreaming. Like I used to live in a house that had a big garage. I'm super good with tangents, by the way. I'm very good at them. The garage. We would like ride our bikes right into the garage. And I would always just like imagine that I was like in like a tiny starship or like a, you know, like a, I'd just like go right into the hangar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, and then we'd have all our bikes.
Yeah, yeah,
on
totally.
The side.
Like a Star Destroyer or whatever. Yeah, like, yeah,
the Star
exactly.
War or something. Totally. Yeah. So I've never made a game about getting on your bike, pretending that it's a tiny spaceship, but that's out there. I'm sure someone could make that game. But that's not the game I'm talking about right now. The game that I'm talking about right now, I was, I don't know, cleaning the shower or washing dishes or something like that. And I'm like, this is pretty boring. What if there were a game about how boring this is and reflecting on that? And then I started thinking about the slow TV movement.
Tell me more.
I think it started in, oh man, I think this is, I'm going to mess this up, but I think that it started in Norway. They just had this like 7-hour train ride between two cities. And they just like filmed the train ride and then put it on TV. And it was like hugely popular, hugely, hugely popular. And some people would like tune in and some people would just like have it on in the background and some people would be watching it. And some people would be checking back because it's like, it's just like this weird thing, right? I started making this game called Retro No Fun Hour with Karate Basket. And you portray this celebrity in the future named Karate Basket. And yeah, you're like doing menial tasks and there's like some dice mechanics, even though you actually like do chores and it's like timed for like an hour. You have some commercial breaks and stuff that you do. It's like a show that's boring.
So that you can just like have it on in the background, as so many people do.
Yeah, exactly.
Aw, that's so nice. It's like you're like making little companions.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
Oh, that's cool. Because that's how I feel about the podcast a lot of the time. Like, I think if Backstory has like educational or like historical or whatever like value, maybe sometimes it has that, but I think like at a base level, a lot of the times I'm just like keeping people company as they just go about their day and do their stuff, and like I'm really into that too.
Yeah that's how I listen to Backstory. Like, yeah, I'll be like making dinner or something and be like, oh cool, and then I'll like, the onions will get too loud or whatever, so I'll have to go and skip back.
My one ratings competitor is onions, and I know this.
yeah, they're rough, unrelenting, those onions. That's really cool, thinking about podcast. I mean, it makes sense that you've done this a lot. I haven't done this. Like, thinking about it in the context of like how it is imbibed.
Yeah, because the whole point is that, like, you know, it's on your phone or whatever and you can take it with you and no one else around you has to experience it at the same time. And in fact, that's very rare. Like, generally speaking, it is consumed like alone and like in a sense privately, but also you can be extremely public. Like, people listen on like the bus or whatever. So it's really strange to think of like what else is going on when people are listening to this. And I'm generally very interested in the answers, especially if they are like outside of just like on the bus or while I'm like cooking or doing housework. Although I really like those, but if there's some kind of other like strange context in which you listen to this, please get in touch with me at Backstorycast on Twitter.
Wow. Yeah. I wonder if there's like rock climbing listeners.
Oh man, that would be rad. Stay safe out there though, folks. How often do you have like a really specific context in mind for a game that you design? Like play it in this way, like at a time or place like this?
I guess every time. Every time. And I'm going to expand that to include like, sometimes I'm like, this game is a tabletop game to be played by people who already know each other in one of their living rooms.
Yeah. I see that kind of specificity a lot in the text, which is like surprisingly uncommon.
I mean, I think that when people want their games to be played, that they'd be wise to not do that. But I also like trust the people playing my games to like modify it in a way that suits them and suits their group. That's totally one of the things I've gotten some feedback over the years, people being like, this particular thing here does not work. You know, like my internal response is like, that particular thing is like the point of the game. That absolutely works. That's like the point of that mechanic. And then, you know, like meditating on like, what could they have meant? And I understand that they're either their home group dynamic or the particular friends that they're playing with this session or that session that they're reporting on, that they just have different preferences, different norms, things that I couldn't possibly account for in my game design process. I guess I've settled on like making extremely specific things that work for the people that I know and trusting that we will either have people who will just like feverishly play it. Is that the word? I'm not looking for the word feverishly.
Like, are you looking for fervently? Hang on, give it Google.
That is okay, the word. Cool. I think that's the one.
Probably.
Thank you. Yeah, please don't play the games feverishly. Stay safe out there, people. Fervently adhering to my every syllable and like trying to play it exactly. It's like, oh, this game requires pennies. Let's not use poker chips or tokens or nickels. Like, even though I may live in a country where there are no longer pennies, we are going to import some pennies. We're going to like find some pennies. And then of course there's the people who are like, cool, close enough, good enough. We're going to obviously play this game in an unheated garage because that's what we do. And you know, we'll all have our mugs of tea and we'll be glad. And like, you know, it's not going to have the cozy setting that Jackson's describing, but we're going to have a great time playing the game. And that's really what's important.
There's something like, it's like when you make a recipe, right? Like if you make a substitution, that's cool. But like, it, you know, it's on you, you know, like if it doesn't come out quite right, you can't go back to that recipe blog being like, this recipe sucks, you know?
Yeah, totally. Though as far as I understand from recipe blogs, people do that.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well, so it's quite common.
So do give me feedback on the games that you've experienced and don't just say that, you know, like, oh, listeners, I'm saying, please do tell me how things go. And, you know, actually, you know, I think there's got to be some give and take. I think it's a collaboration between the recipe and the person making it. Like just because someone wrote it down doesn't mean it makes sense.
Have you ever had the experience of like someone playing one of your games not exactly as you intended and you were like, oh, that's much better?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, totally. Tell me how.
Man, if my memory was great, I would really come out with a wonderful anecdote right now. Yeah, I feel like that very, I mean, maybe that's just like the playtesting process in a nutshell. Yeah, no, some like marvelous assumptions. I am having a hard time finding a great anecdote right now. I'm just trying to like comb through some recent playtests. And while we've had like amazing, you know, where something that seemed to make sense on the page obviously didn't make sense in real life.
Oh, yeah. That's like 90% of the first draft of a game. So, yeah.
Right. Totally. You're like, oh, clearly this person would be holding this and then they'll pass it to that person. And you're like, how?
Yeah. Or you're like, well, everyone's going to be most excited to like answer these questions and nobody's going to want to roll dice because that's less fun. And then everyone's just like, give me those dice. Give them to me.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, people are so exciting and unexpected.
Yeah. And it's also this funny thing where like, I feel like sometimes it makes sense, you know, given that scenario that you've just concocted, to shift the design so that the questions, which, you know, one thought were going to be really exciting to the players, are now less emphasized than the dice are. But, you know, like, people are really exciting and people are really, really different. And so the 40 people that you've, I'm like, this ridiculous number, right? But like 40 people that I've already played this hypothetical game with have all been really excited about the dice. But like, if I think the questions are really cool, there are going to be people out there who also like the questions. And, you know, like, there'll be some play group who'll be like, these dice, which is like me directly saying, like, don't worry about all of your feedback from playtesting.
Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Not all feedback is equally valuable.
Yeah. Because there's this thing where like I was watching this little thing about shared space in traffic redesigning in England, where the cars and buses and bicyclists and pedestrians all just sort of like walk in the street willy-nilly. You know, there's still like sidewalks or pavements, rather, as they're referred to over there. But for crossings and intersections, just sort of like, you do you, go nuts. And of course, this doesn't work for people who have sight difficulties. That's like really difficult for them. But largely, it's sort of, you know, I mean, it's a game design question. And some people being interviewed are like, we far, far prefer it the way it was. But listening to that, I sort of had this thing of like, yes, but you're just preferring it how you're accustomed to it. And so I think with game design, that it's very important to accept that people often prefer it how they're accustomed to it. But if you're doing something new, then that's okay. Just like, do the new thing. And maybe, you know, in a couple of years, that will be the common thing that people will want to be accustomed to, or like will prefer to have it be as. God, my senses are insane. That's always true, though. So I feel like I'm just relaying my true self. So, oh man, speaking of first drafts, there's like this thing where it's like I love, you know this, I love short games. I love concise games. But my sentences are just bonkers. And they'll like, you know, it's like so many clauses, just like so much like garbage crammed in there, like roll the dice very hard. Like, I've never actually written.
Actually that's great down. Advice. I want to play a game with that really instruction. Good. Like, to have that be a different move. Yeah.
You'll be able to very soon.
Oh, that's great. Let's collab. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. You're a different move. Oh, that's good, Alex. Oh man. Yeah, this is like totally the thing. I've got like all these bits of paper. Like, it's really insane. Like, I've just got like bits of paper covering everything. Like desk, table, like different chairs and stuff. And I come by this honestly. My mom's like has a similar organizational pattern.
Yep. Shout out to my dad also. Just everything is written on an envelope to the point where you're like, where are the papers that were in the envelopes? Like, these are just blank envelopes that have been written on. Why?
That's so good. I wonder, I mean, like, I can see, like, it's a really nice format, actually, than envelope. Like, it's good for a list. I might just be with your dad on this one. I mean,
I'm sorry, I came at you really hard just there. Please allow me to non-judgmentally listen to your thoughts on envelopes.
No, all good. It's all good. I mean, like, also, I feel like there is, I'm implicitly opening myself to being come at hard in a scenario where I'm like aligning myself with someone's parent. You know, it's like right away, it's like I have these heavy feelings about my parent. Oh, I'm just the same way. It's like, yeah, I'm just saying come at me is literally what I'm saying here.
Okay, so I came at you. Tell me why you like writing on envelopes. What are the affordances of that medium?
Oh, yes. So an envelope gives one the feeling of temporariness. It doesn't have to be a final draft. It's just like a quick sketch off to the side. It's a sidebar. It's the margin to a page, whatever other paper is in front of you. I think it's good for a list. I mean, on the outside, that you've got like some other little notes that you've written on the back of a receipt that you had in your wallet earlier. Mm-hmm. You can shove that right into the envelope. I would never do that. I don't. This is more like.
Now you're just trying to sell me on like potential features.
Yeah, totally, totally. I think the thickness of the two pieces of paper together really do something with the pen, you know? I'm assuming you're using a rollerball pen, definitely, obviously.
I mean, my God, your pen could even go inside the envelope.
Whoa.
I'm really coming around on this envelope issue.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to go get a pack of envelopes today, I think. New ones. Seal them, rip them open. They'll be ready to go.
This, my product placement's getting a little out of hand and also is very vague. I've been bought out by Big Envelope and everyone can tell. We need to do it again so it's more subtle.
Okay. We can do it again.
We could keep talking about formats and games though, because I feel like right now the format that feels cool and is exciting and has been really exciting for maybe the past 10 years is like PDFs. And there are people who can do things with PDF that they wouldn't have been able to do before. And that's really exciting. But at some point we're going to get bored of that. And the new way, and of course, like games that are just books are still things, but what are we going to get excited about next? If not envelope games.
So I want to apologize, but I am a little bit out of the loop. What is a PDF? Okay. I think, PDFs are extremely exciting and we can, make different sizes of pages. This is the most exciting thing to me.
I love this so much. It means portable document format, which I actually didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I can picture the little star above my head right now.
Right. So different sizes of papers and yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So PDFs, they're really good. I want to say, in case that big PDF is listening way into it. What's next? I think the next thing that I'm excited about is games that you have all the bits in front of you.
Yeah. Stop it. Stop it. Stop tormenting me.
Sorry. Man, that was the most resigned agreement. I've yet heard from you, Alex.
Because it's just a huge pain from a production standpoint to get all the little,
it's a huge pain.
Okay, you got to put little pencils in there and a little notebook and how many cents is this going to cost depending on how many hundreds of them we produce, you know?
Oh, yeah. Cents. I thought you meant like essential
now
oils.
If the box opened and it was, we had some sandalwood going on, I think that would be great. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, seriously. Yeah. I'm going to make
it's
a
really
note,
good.
Actually.
Speaking of That's production really nightmares. Good. So yeah, it's just like a total like hellscape to produce, but then like, it's kind of bonkers that more games aren't made like that because it's such a nice thing for the person who plays the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's this sort of like sliding scale that, you know, we're seeing designers, you know, position particular games along and like that on one extreme, you have like the digital game, most likely a PDF, which is extremely convenient to move around. And I think, it's like funny because PDFs also allow for like a printable, like having materials be like printable, I mean, consumable, I guess, is consumable materials is, I do feel really wary about putting consumable materials into the design of a project that's meant to come in a box, like a game that, you know, I would open and find all the pieces to, and that even if there were, maybe I'm answering my own question here, that we could have like a couple rounds of the sheets in the box and then also the PDF would be available somehow to that person.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm glad you just came to this realization.
Yeah, glad we figured that out.
That's really good.
That's really good.
And there's also like, think about when you played, you know, Yahtzee or whatever, And it comes with a little score chart. But then when you run out of score charts, you just start to make your own.
Envelopes, yeah.
Like at some point.
Yeah.
For example.
I think I literally do have, like, especially Scrabble, like old ones, you know, like mom, grandma, myself, scrabbling it up. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of consumable materials, I got really excited reading about Baba Zubi's missing pet. Yes.
Yeah,
yes. Yes. Baba Zubi. It's really sweet and like lovely. And has it been played to your knowledge? Like, have you gotten to like, oh, I mean, first of all, tell my listeners the format and story of this game.
Yes. Okay. So Baba Zubi's missing pet is a, oh man, how to tell the story first. I think in, okay. So it goes like this. A player encountering this game is transported into a magical woodland, which is simultaneously also a neighborhood that they are physically walking around. The format of the game is a variety of posters that are put up on electrical poles or street lamps or anything like that, interspersed throughout the neighborhood. I suppose if you're in the kind of neighborhood that no longer has that kind of thing, yeah, you'll figure something out. How's that for her? It's something I thought about while making the game too, and I was like, they're going to figure something out.
Yeah.
And so there are many different posters, and each poster is a different situation. And so you've got a little illustration, and you've got something that like describes to you a character or a gathering or something who's interacting with you. And while you're walking through this, you're looking through, or you're looking for rather, a gormwar, which is some kind of animal or beast or something, which is apparently the missing pet of someone named Baba Zubi. How's that for an introduction?
Yeah, that's pretty much the format. Yeah, I could have described it.
Great, great.
It's actually very intimidating to do that, like right in front of the person who made it, because they could always just be like, that's not my intent at all. That's, you know.
Oh my gosh. Right, right, right.
Yeah. So anyways.
Yeah, that's, has, yes, yes, yes. So the question is, has it been played? It has been played. I set it up in West Olympia, which is, I mean, it's one of those things, right? Where like the game is actually written for West Olympia. I didn't know exactly where I'd put all of the, like, it wasn't like a, oh, clearly the, you know, the potion mixer is going to be like here. Clearly the grand waffler is going to be over here. You know, a grand waffler is someone who makes very good waffles, obviously, not someone who can't make decisions like myself. But yes, it was written for West Olympia. So just the experience of like walking around in this small residential neighborhood, lovely trees, very low amount of traffic. Yeah, just sort of like walk with a group. And it's also been played in Portland, to my knowledge. Jory Bowers set it up in a park. I believe it was Laurelhurst Park, and invited a ton of people. And then someone who I know through blues dancing actually played it there and slowly put together after the fact that's like, wait, I think I know that guy who made that, which is like a fun, you know, two steps removed kind of thing. And then also I actually played it with my mom in a different way. You know, when I go to, you know, though I think it would be nice to, you know, like for my old hometown to set up some like giant multi-poster game in a neighborhood and just like let it ride, you know. I didn't do that. Instead, I drew a map of a neighborhood and marked out where all the different things were and sort of like took my mom through it like it were like a dungeon, I guess.
A nice one. A helpful place.
A nice one. A very nice one. Yeah, and I want to say as sort of an aside that I don't think that's a great way to play the game. I think that I had a really good time with my mom, and it was a better use of my time at home visiting than like spending a couple hours putting up posters instead of hanging out with her. But I think that in the tension of the game design, you're either walking around by yourself or with someone that you're in conversation with. And after each poster, it leaves you with some discussion questions, and that'll like take you part of the way or the whole way to the next poster. And just doing it on paper it was very easy to skip past that part because we didn't actually have to walk anywhere.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. Because again, it's for a very specific context.
Right.
Right. And there's things you miss when you substitute. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like who really wishes on poker chips? When you're throwing things into a well. Exactly. Exactly. I'm throwing it onto a table that's covered in towels, but still.
There's no weight to it.
Yeah.
What I like about Baba Zubi is that it reminds me of a good version of something that I don't like, which is scavenger hunts. I don't know why, but I've just never had a good time with a scavenger hunt. But I like this because it's sort of like a really non-competitive, talking-based, exploratory, like, scavenger journey. I don't know. I don't know if that makes any sense. Was that your intention? Were you playing with the scavenger hunt format or doing something else?
I think I might have been like as a background element, but no, it originated from, hold on, let me see if I can. Nathaniel Russell is an artist who made up a bunch of ridiculous like joke posters.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, maybe you've seen a couple of them floating around online, and you know, like there's, you know, one about like, this is going from memory here, but it's something like, it says like snake poems. And then it's got a picture of a snake, and then it says meet back here in half an hour. And then under that, it says, let's do this. It's just like, so genius. Yeah. And I was just like, oh my God, what can I do with this? This is so good. Putting up posters that like don't really refer to something. And what grew out of that is posters that very much refer to something. They refer to a bunch of other posters in a network through the neighborhood. One of the things I really like about Baba Zubi is that, and how it supports this like non-scavenger hunt idea, is that none of the players who I've gotten a chance to speak with about it felt that they had to be really completionist. That like, even though I gave them a map that I'd made for like where the boundaries of the game that I'd set up, of the instance of it that I'd set up are, like no one methodically went down each street and just like, I've got to look at every poster. That they like wandered, they sought out the Gormboire, but some players found the Gormboire, some players did not find the Gormboire, and they were pleased about that. That it was satisfying. It was satisfying regardless as to what aspects of it they encountered and engaged with.
And it's got to feel pretty good as a designer.
Oh man, it felt so good. Yeah, it was so good. Yeah, it was really great.
So I'm really enjoying this interview because I'm just realizing now that we didn't talk about like your biggest game or like the game that won an award or like your most recent game. I was just like, I love Baba Zubi and those cute little illustrations. Can we just spend like a lot of time on that? But anyway, I encourage our listeners to check out other stuff that you've done, right? Like Glitch Iteration or the name of the game actually that won an auto has completely escaped me.
Oh, that's okay. It's called The Boiler and it's very hard to check out because I've got all the copies here. So
that's
good.
Just imagine it. Imagine that's very good.
Yeah, it's quite good. I like it, and other people have said they liked it. So,
well,
but someday,
yeah, exactly. Someday. It could take some other form. You will know when the time is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, yeah. When the time is right, it will be out.
Well, if people want to learn more about your stuff, or if they want to keep up with you and what you're working on, where should they go and do that?
Oh yeah, there's lots of great places. Photographsoflightning.com is a website that I have secured and use.
Your sentences are wild.
Yeah, just like this is how you say this thing. Yeah, so I've got a bunch of my games and stuff up there. I also, put up games on Patreon, and that's been really, really lovely. So you can support me on Patreon and find out what I'm doing every month. And I've been leaning towards, this has been like a long leaning process, leaning towards making a collection of those games, or making a couple of them more, you know, physical, having there be an object that one could get. Oh, sentences. So that is another great way to keep up with what I'm doing. And I'm also on the social networks as Jackson Tegu.
That's all.
That's
great.
Yeah.
Those are good ways.
Those are
the
good ways.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm really glad that we could do this. It was awesome.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, yay.
Yay.
I'm going to stop the recording. Well, thanks again to Jackson for joining us. And as always, thank you for listening. If you have thoughts on today's show, you can always email me, that's backstorypodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, @backstorycast. Backstory is part of the One Shot Podcast Network. You can go to oneshotpodcast.com to find more great shows, such as One Shot. One Shot is an actual play podcast where James D'Amato leads a rotating cast of improvisers, game designers, and other notable nerds through a variety of role-playing games. Every month, One Shot plays a new game with a new cast of players. It's usually very silly. Music for Backstory is provided by Uchiko. The track is called Thinkin' of You. And you can hear more at soundcloud.com/UJICO. Talk to you later, heroes.